Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Friends of Kevin Radio Show. The Friends of Kevin Radio Show helps promote businesses, nonprofits, and honest. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email to kevin@friendsofkevin.com. To learn more about the Friends of Kevin Networking Group, please visit our website at friendsofkevin.com. So excited to take on my longtime friend Jack Wayne from Long Island Financial with us. As always, guys, when Jack joins the show, it's for informational purposes. You should not consider this as financial advice. As always, seek a qualified financial person before making any decisions. Good afternoon, Jack. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Kevin. Always appreciate it.
So, Jack, I want to talk a little bit about retirement savings today. Jack, one of the things I see happen is a lot of people all of a sudden get to be 50, 55 years old, and they start to, you know, consider retirement and go, I just didn't save enough. So what are some of the strategies for someone, you know, how much money should they be saving? Let's start there.
Yeah. You hear about this all the time in the news, right? About baby boomers, especially where there's this issue of inadequate retirement savings. And so the numbers are kind of scary. The stats are kind of scary, but there's a couple of rules of thumb, if you will. One of the large investment firms put out a study, I think last year or the year before, basically saying you want to save 25 times your annual income right before retirement, right? So that means if you make $100,000 a year, 25 times that is $2.5 million, supposedly. The inverse of that rule is basically an old rule of thumb. It's been around since the early 90s called the 4% rule. And the 4% rule basically says that whatever your portfolio is, you know, what do you have for investments, you can take out 4% a year, adjusting for inflation, and that money should, in theory, last you 30 years. So again, if you have $100,000 in your 401k or IRA, that means you can take out about $4,000 per year, ends up being, you know, $300 and whatever per month. Doesn't sound like a lot because you have to make the money last. Obviously, it depends on income, you know, what people really need. And there's estimates all over the chart on that. You know, some people say 70 to 80%. Other people say more. It can really vary based on individual circumstances.
And it also must depend on your dreams, too. If your goal is to retire and you want to, you know, go sailing around the world, or, you know, hey, I want to spend my, you know, my winters, you know, in warmer weather. So it depends on what your plans are too, right? And whether you plan on just staying home and watching Netflix or traveling the world, right?
Of course. I mean, and that's why I tend to think that the numbers need to be a little bit higher in terms of how much income you need. Not to scare people or anything, but you're absolutely right. If your plan of retirement is to take that big family vacation with the kids and grandkids, or to sail around the world, or just travel in general, you know, that's obviously a different level of spending than I'm going to sit at home and, you know, sit on the couch, eat bonbons, and watch TV, daytime TV all day, right? That doesn't take as much money. So,
of course.
So, you know, it really does depend on sort of what your outlook is for that.
Well, but one thing people forget, you know, just think about like when you're on vacation, you know, you're going to spend more money than you think, because if you're not working your home all day, it's easy to say, hey, let's go, you know, out to lunch, or let's go do this. So, you know, I would think a lot of people might underestimate their entertainment costs. Do you see that?
I do. You know, one of the things I've heard about this is retirement, however you choose to define it, but in some ways it could be like where every day is a Saturday. And so if normally on a Saturday you like to go shopping or go out to eat or whatever, then you're looking at that every day. There's a well-known financial columnist who writes about these issues as well. And she talks about her husband retired, and how miraculously there are all these home improvement projects that come up in retirement. And the husband is at Home Depot, you know, multiple times a week buying whatever for their house or yard or you know, whatever. So, you know, these things come up. And so, you know, people may have the best of intentions. Oh, you know what, I'm not going to eat out, or I'm not going to do this. But the reality is You know, when you have all day and you're looking for stuff to do, stuff finds you.
Yeah, it really does. But now, the answer most people give to this, Jack, is like, Jack, don't worry about it, bud. I'm just going to spend less money. You know, I'm not going to need two cars and, you know, not going to need clothes, no business clothes. So my costs are going to be way less, Jack. I'm sure you hear that a lot, right?
I do. And I think back to one of my favorite stories, and I think back to when I was in college, and this was obviously a long time ago. You know, my buddies and I would take a road trip, we'd go somewhere, and we would think nothing of just piling, you know, eight people into a hotel room, right? A couple of people get the bed, everybody else on the floor. And I was one of the guys said, hey, you know, no problem, I'll take the floor. Well, I'm older now, and my body really can't take sleeping on the floor. So I really want my bed, and a comfortable one at that. And so my point there is that just because we think we are able to, or we used to do something, that doesn't mean that we actually want to do that now. You know, there is something called lifestyle creep or lifestyle inflation, and to a certain extent, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't want to go back to a car with crank windows and no AC. You know, I don't want to go back to having to sleep on the floor. I like a comfortable bed, and I'm willing to pay for it now. You know, and so, you know, people say, well, I don't, you know, I could do it, but the question becomes is just because you can sleep on the floor, does that mean you really want to sleep on the floor? Probably not, right? But unfortunately, with the state of affairs, is people end up needing to sleep on the floor, and sort of my story, their analogy. So obviously, you don't, you know, you don't want to have to do it. You much rather sort of do it because you want to do it.
So, Jack, one of the things we both see is people say, you know what, my solution to this is, Jack, I'm just going to continue to work. I'm not going to retire. That way, I don't have to really think about retirement. I'm just going to keep working. Well, that's not always a strategy because sometimes, you know, unemployment comes in or health issues come in. So you can't just put it off forever in most cases, right?
Right. I mean, one of the traditional pieces of financial advice is just, you know, work longer and take Social Security later. Okay, you can wait up until age 70. Your benefits grow once you're past your full retirement age. It's not a bad strategy, but like you said, life gets in the way, health gets in the way. You could get laid off, and that's just not in your control. And so, as great of a strategy is, it may not be feasible because you can't always get to 70. Right. And by the way, you know, the average Social Security benefit, now, granted, this is people who claim early, claim late, whatever, the average benefit's only $1,300 a month. So it's not that huge. So the longer you can wait, the better, and let that thing grow, the better off you're going to be.
Makes total sense and stuff. So now, what are some of the strategies to help people catch up? If you're looking at it saying, you know, we just talked about it earlier, you know, to t 25 times what you're making, and people look at that and go, well, unfortunately, Jack, I'm never going to retire because I'm never going to have that. Do people really need to have enough money currently in their accounts for the next 30 years to assume they can retire safely?
No, not necessarily. You know, when we talk about some of those statistics, the 25 times or the 4%, those are really talking about having money last through retirement, right? But for a lot of people, it's going to be about saving enough to get to retirement. So what I mean, of course, is that, you know, if you want to wait till 70 to collect your Social Security, but you got laid off at 66, let's say. Well, that's a 4-year gap that you have to save for, right? Versus a potentially 20 to 30-year retirement timeframe. Now, again, granted, do you always want to just rely upon Social Security? Probably not. But if you can save enough to get to retirement and then trigger your higher benefits, you know, life may not be so bad. You might get a semi-comfortable bed, I guess. So, you know, so sometimes people are trying to catch up, save enough to get to, it's not nearly as daunting.
So, Jack, one of the challenges I see is that we all have those friends that just, you know, they just don't have enough money to save. You know, life kind of gets in the way between paying for the children's much cost, maybe some medical bills. What about those people? What are they supposed to?
Yeah, I mean, again, the traditional financial advice, you know, for late starters is save up to the maximum. You know, you can save $24,000 a year in your 401k. So, again, the problem with that is if you're not doing it today, you're not doing it tomorrow because, you know, again, life gets in the way. So you want to be strategic about sort of reducing some of your overhead, particularly debt. Instead of always paying off the highest rate, maybe you want to pay off the ones you can pay off faster so that you get rid of them, so you start freeing up some money. Of course, there's always the notion of getting part-time jobs or side gigs, so to speak, but I would focus on taking care of yourself and reducing that burden of debt first.
So now, Jack, one of the things I see happen, too, is people look and say, you know what, I'm really far behind, so I know I'm going to take all the money I have and invest as aggressively as I can, hoping for that proverbial Hail Mary pass. That's a cool idea, right, Chuckle Chuckle?
Yeah, you know, the Hail Mary, right? I mean, it's only great because it does sometimes actually work, right? I mean, as fans, we all love it when it works for us, not so much when it works against us. You know, when it comes to saving for retirement, relying on a Hail Mary is like relying on getting a winning lottery ticket. It's not so much a plan. You really can't control the market, so instead you focus on reducing costs. It's a little bit more of a sure thing, like taking care of the debt burden. Or one of the major costs for retirement is taxes. So if you plan on continuing to work during retirement or have some savings, you want to avoid some of the hidden taxes, like triggering taxation on your Social Security benefits or triggering surcharges on Medicare. By avoiding those, you can make whatever little savings you may have go a little bit farther because you're not wasting it on taxes. So the Hail Mary approach, I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, in a football game, it's sure exciting to watch.
Sure is. Now, I see a lot of people have a big piece of their nest egg in their home. And they're often hesitant to, you know, maybe take a reverse mortgage on it because they want to leave that home to their kids. And in many situations, the children don't want it. They're already off in their life. They already have a home. So should people consider that, you know, when they start to say, no, I want to keep the home. I owe it out. I owe it no debt. I want to leave it to my children. Maybe they're better off utilizing the nest egg than struggling.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because so many people, you know, especially if you've been in a house for years, you know, raised your kids there, there's a lot of sentimental value attached. And so chances are you have a lot of equity in your house. But remember, equity is just that. You can't always touch it. Like, you can't run down to the bank and say, can I withdraw it, right? You can borrow it. So reverse mortgages can really help not only by unleashing the equity in your house, but also that those proceeds are actually tax-free, can be tax-free. So it's a great source of income or other source of cash that doesn't trigger some of those taxes we were just talking about. Here's the thing, though. Often when I run into this, people will say, well, but, you know, I don't want to do this because I want to leave the house to my kids. And you're right. You know, a lot of times kids already have houses on their own. So I often ask them, well, do you want to leave them the house or do you want them to leave them the value of the house, right? Those are two totally different things. So if you're looking to leave them the value of the house, you do a different strategy. Perhaps it's insurance or something. You know, realistically, you know, what people really avoid that I run to is they don't want to leave their kids a bill or be a burden. And reverse mortgages can be a tool to help eliminate that. So I encourage people to at least consider it.
Jack, got about 45 seconds left. Prescribe your contact info before you go.
All right. People can reach me via email at jack@longhornfin.com, or they can visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/longhornfin.
Jack, as always, appreciate you calling to the show. And as always, thanks for being my friend.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate being on.
Have a great day.